All right, so last time I wanted to mention something that I forgot, which is that there was a little, what do you call it, Ni'ilas Achag, Achari Tefillah, right before Shavuos was over. So there was a guy there, a balabas, so he said that he was in a shir at Beis Tefillah, and he said that like after the shir was over, I forgot what he said the shir was about, he said after the shir was over, so like he piped up and he said to the person giving the shir that you know, we're supposed to have like Pesach and then Shavuos, and we're supposed to feel like we're uplifted by it and inspired and that we got something out of it. And he said, you know, after Pesach, I really just felt like putting away my Pesach dishes and taking out my regular dishes, and I didn't really feel much anything else. And Shavuos also, you know, like I didn't, you know, like, and everybody around him was like, oh, I'm so happy that you said that. You know, like they're all thinking it, just only one guy had the guts to say it. So he said something that didn't really make sense to me at first. And he said that he shared with everybody how he presented people with this like question, what would you do if all of a sudden you found out that you weren't Jewish? Or let's say, what would you do if all of a sudden God gave you a half hour off? What would you do? So he said that there was some, maybe a giyaris at his house over Pesach or Shavuos, I don't remember when. And he said that he presented this question to her, like, what would you do if you found out, oh, maybe she was adopted as a baby. She was adopted as a baby. So they were Megayer her. She said, what would you do if you found out that, like, you just didn't have to be Jewish or, like, you're not Jewish or whatever? So she said, I would kill myself because life would have no purpose. So that wasn't, so then he said, it was like very like not defined what he was trying to say, but it sounded like what he was trying to say is that the whole purpose is to feel like you want to do it, and if you don't feel that way, then there's a real problem. And he said, I got a lot of chizuk out of that. And I'm like sitting there thinking to myself, I can't get this guy. I'm trying to figure him out. He's starting off saying how he goes through a yontif and he knows he's supposed to feel uplifted, inspired, or whatever, and doesn't feel that way. Somehow he came onto this chiddush vort, whatever you want to call it, ha'ara, right? That if you don't feel like you would want to be Jewish and do Torah and mitzvahs, even if you would, let's say, be told that you're not Jewish or would be given a half hour off, then you're really missing the point. And the sum total of this was that he got a chizuk. I'm thinking to myself, I'm trying to make heads or tails of this. Like, what happened over here? How did this guy, who didn't just get a chizuk from Yantiv itself, or from Pesach itself, from Shavuos itself, or from listening to a shir, did not get a chizuk, and somehow realizing that if a person would be given a half hour reprieve, or would be told that he's not Jewish, if he wouldn't want to do the right thing, then that's really bad, that gave him a chizuk. So, my conclusion was, is that what gave him a chizuk was not the vart itself. It's that he had a vart. It's that he had a chiddush. I mean, I don't know exactly what chiddush was, you know, but whatever. In his mind, he had a chiddush. Like, he was oimed on a certain nekuda in his mind. And that was what he got a chizuk from. That was his chizuk. His chizuk was that he had a chiddush. He had a nekuda. And from that, I got a chizuk. Now, what's the chizuk that I got from that? You guys know who Rabbi Fishman is, Rabbi Elchanan Fishman? He was here to speak by the girl every now and then. He's a mashkiach in Teres Moshe. You've heard of Teres Moshe, Tomo? Yeah? So I one time asked him the following question. I said, when I was learning Teres Moshe, I said, I learned through Zahirus in the Mesillas Yesharim. I'm not a Zahir. So what's the point? I'm still not a Zahir. What's the point of going on to Zrizus? Or let's say I learned Zrizus in the Mesillas Yesharim. I'm not a Zariz. What's the point of going on to Nikius? And so on and so forth. So he told me, he said that someone once asked that question to an Adam Gadol. I don't remember the name of the Adam Gadol that he quoted. And he said that this Adam Gadol said the following. He said that the truth is that in previous generations, that was the way to do it. You learn Zahirus and you work on it until you become a Zahir. And then, once you're a Zahir, you go on to Zvizus and you work on it. You keep working at it until you finally get Zvizus down pat, then you work on to Nikius. You go on to Nikius. And that's like the orderly way of, it's like an orderly progression in Avodas Hashem. And he said, but our situation nowadays is Mashal Amad Avar Daitman. He said, imagine you got this poor, starving guy. He's wandering through some city.
And he comes across the palace of this really like rich guy, and he can hear there's a party going on and smells that there's food being served. So he knocks on the door and he says, "I'm poor and starving, could I please have something to eat?" And the guy who's throwing a party is very benevolent. So then the butler knows that he's benevolent, and the butler says, "Yeah, my master always says to bring in anybody, you know, the man of the house says to bring in anybody." So finally they bring him in, and they had started off with, you know, an appetizer and smorgasbord and hors d'oeuvres and soup, salad, fish, and, you know, fruit first course, and then they get into the first three side dishes of the menu. Mamish, a whole proper kesudas shleima b'shaifa, the kids are. So he gets there, and they're like up to like the fourth, you know, side dish of the main course. So they bring him in, they put down a place setting, and mamish the whole mechubad gazach, and they immediately bring him the food which is on the table. And he looks at it and he says, "Where's the appetizer? Where's the hors d'oeuvres? Where's the soup, the salad, the fish? Wait, this is the way to serve someone." So they look at him and they say, "Shaita shiva oilam." See, you're starving. You have to just take whatever you can get. In other words, when things are going well and things are like the way they should be, and people have the kaifas that you know, that are really the kaifas that people should have, so then yeah, you do things kiseder. You do it in the proper orderly progression. You know, first you start with this, and then you master it, you move on to the next thing. But nowadays we're so weak, we're starving. We're spiritually starving. So Mamelis, what we do is that wherever we're able to get Epis Chizuk over here, Epis Ha'ara over there, Epis, you know, something that prods us, whatever we're able to get, we get a little bit here, a little bit there, a little point here. So we get whatever we can get from wherever we can get. You know, we can be learning Kedusha, right? The parak of Kedusha in Mesillas Yesharim, which we're so completely not shaykh to. We have no shaykhs to Kedusha, right? And yet still, you know, Epis, we got some Nakuda that we're able to get some Ha'ara, some chizik out of it. So I wanted to apply that concept to Yontif also. You know, we hear a lot about Jews and how, like, you know, Yontif is supposed to be a time of Avaida, and it's supposed to be a time of, you know, there's Zman Zibchaseinu and Zman Cheruseinu and Zman Matan Tayruseinu and re-being Mekabal the Torah and, you know, being kind of the meat of Simcha and the meat of Cherus and all these things. And like, you know, we go through a Yontif and like, we feel like, okay. That didn't happen by me, right? So like, so what? So like, we're just supposed to be like, alright, so I guess, you know, I'm not, that's not for me. No, it's not true. We're able to grow on our level. And what's that? So I think the Eitzah Yehutzah on the practical level is that we're supposed to be able to just get whatever we can get out of it. So I think that like a practical Eitzah is that we should, whenever we go through a Yontif for like a special time, whether it's Hanukkah, Purim, Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, right, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, we should be on the lookout with our eyes and our ears for like a thought, a Ha'ara, a vart, a story, something that we heard along the way that was ma'ir us, right? Whether it's that we have something on our own or we heard something that someone else said. Again, it could just be a story. You heard a story over Yontif that, I like that story. Somehow that story, like that resonated with me, right? I like the message that it was saying. So take that as your, you know, what you got out of the Yontif and go with that. And I think most everybody, you know, if you go with this Mahalach, there'll be something, you know, some Nakuda along the way. Yeah, I like that. Or maybe not even a Ha'ara or a story, but let's say, you know, over Sukkot, let's say you went to the Kais at one point and, you know, you had a good davening. So that's what you're going to take. You're going to take that good davening and that's what you got out of the Yontif. Okay. Next, moving on a little bit from the parsha. It's a fascinating thing. You know, you have the Levim, right? The Ribbono Shel Olam tells Moshe and Aaron to take the Levim, and now the Levim are going to be, you know, we're going to go through this whole procedure of establishing the Levim as the, you know, the ones who are in charge of Mishmeres HaMikdash. So you guys know what goes on, how this procedure works? Okay, so first they're feathered. I'm using it as a borrowed expression. All of their body hair is shaved off. Okay? So it's like taking a chicken and feathering it, like a naked chicken. Right? And then they're squashed. Right? Then they're squashed. What am I referring to? The Levim are like a korban. No, I'm not kidding, by the way. Imagine, all of Klal Yisrael had to do smicha. And the implication is that every single person in Klal Yisrael had to do smicha on every single Levi. All of Bnei Yisrael. But even if you'll say it was just one person, each lady just got one smicha done, it's kol kaychai. That means someone's coming over to you and putting all of his weight on you. That's the smicha is kol kaychai. Smicha by carbon is kol kaychai. You put all of your weight. So l'chayr the pashup shad is that all of Klal Yisrael, they went in the line, every single lady squat. They didn't have to squish him down, but they had to build. And then, after that, it's like the shlugin kaparis, right? You take this feathered chicken, right? You de-feathered him, so now he's naked. You squashed him, and now you're shlugging him around your head. What am I referring to? The tenufa. The heinafta is the tenufa. The person told, Vaishan Aaron, to take, Aaron had to pick up every single lady and do like shlugin kaparis. Tenufa. You know, if I was a lady at that time, I might have said, you know, Hashem, thanks, but no thanks, right? I'll pass. I'm not interested in having every single body hair shaved off of my body and then being squashed and swung around like a chicken on Erev Yom Kippur. So, what am I trying to get at? Obviously, this was leading up, and this was the procedure of the Levium entering into the godless that they had. And yet, that they had to go through this process, which like seems humiliating and painful. I mean, think about it. Like, they have all their body hair shaved off, right? I mean, a beard, you know, by even nowadays, by most people, right? It's a chashuv zach. Can you imagine back then, like, before Haskalah came around, right? Before, the truth is that before the French Renaissance, even by Goyim they had beards. Even like Goyim, like a man had a beard. That you have a beard, right? It's, to have someone shave off his beard is like taking away his whole signature of chashivus. So, l'chayra, they're undergoing a process which is l'chayra humiliating and painful, and this is leading up to them, to their, you know, their massive of, wow, now they are shomer mishmeres hamikdash. What I'm not going to attempt to do is why that was necessary for them. What I would like to do is take out a Musar Haskel for us. Sometimes we feel like, you know, let's hold it for just a minute. It says in the beginning of the parsha, it says Bahalais Lesaneris. So Rashi brings the Medrash that says, why is the parsha of Bahalais Lesaneris right after the Korbanos HaNesim? So it says because Aaron, his Shevet didn't have any chelik in the Chanukah Samizbeach. They weren't, their Shevet Levi was not included, was not represented. So Aaron had a Chalisha Sadas. He felt terrible. He had a Chalisha Sadas. So the Ribbono Shel Olam said to him, no, Chayach Shelcha Gedolah Mishelohem. Yours is bigger than theirs. Right? In other words, you get to do the Neiris, right? Which, Stamazi, you could ask Akasha, like, why is it Dafka talking about the Hadlakas Haneris and the Menorah in the Beis HaMikdash? Should we be talking about any Avoda? They're the ones who are Makar the Karbonis every day. So, I mean, you could ask a couple questions. First of all, what type of an answer is that? Shkoyach. Okay, so I get to partake in this mitzvah. What? So that means that I don't want to partake in this other mitzvah? It's like, if you have a... There was a Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel was once trying to raise money from someone, a very wealthy man, and the guy said to him, Mamish b'chutzpah, he said, you have so many talmidim in your yeshiva already, what do you need more for? It's enough already. So Rav Nosson Tzvi said, you have so much money already, why do you keep working so hard to have more money? It's enough already. And he said, Elamai, you love money. So you keep working, you come to work every day, early, like the early bird who gets the worm, and you stay late. And you come out, don't have anything to do with your family. I'm dramatizing it. He didn't say this, right? At least he didn't say that in the book, right? And you're working so hard, why? Because you love money, and you want more, and more, and more. Well, I love Torah, and I want more, and more, and more. How did that connect to Torah? Oh, right. So the way that connects is that, so what kind of an answer is this? Hashem says to him, don't worry, you have the menorah. You have the hadlakas haneris of the menorah in the base of English. So what? I also want that mitzvah. Right? It's okay, you know, you don't have to have matzah on Pesach because you'll be able to have Esrog on Sukkos. I want matzah on Pesach also. Well, what kind of an answer is that? Number two is that, what's going on here? It sounds like you know, you give the other day, I have this like point system, you know, I don't know what it's like in America, but at least here in the school system, it's like the kids are just like, it's like, imagine you have like this intravenous tube hooked up to a person and you're constantly pumping sugar in. You grew up here? Did you grow up here? Yeah. Yeah, so in cheder, they're constantly giving candy. I don't know at what age it stops. I hope that at some age it stops. But like at least the younger ages, it's just they're being pumped with sugar. So it's not so healthy, right? So I try to get my kids not to do it. So I came up with this idea that what I'm going to do is I'm going to make a point system. They can trade in their candies for points, and the points are worth money, right? So for instance, my daughter, she worked up to 30 points, and then she got to get a 30 shekel sticker album. Okay? And my son, who's only 4 and a half, he's been working for months, he's almost up to 100, he's gonna get a basketball net, a real one though. He's gonna get a basketball net when he gets up to 100 points. Okay, so my daughter was holding by the 30 points, so I took her out to the store in the Merkaz. And of course, my son, Kedakim Shel Kids, gets all jealous, and he's like, I want to come. And I said, no, this is Chana's special trip. You know, this is her special trip because this is her redeeming of the points. It's actually funny, I just got a new computer because I redeemed the points from my credit card. I had a credit card for like 10 years, never redeemed the points. I had like 100,000 points. So I was able to get a really good computer, like a $600, $700 computer for nothing, like for free. I redeemed all my points. So my son, the computer came yesterday, so my son was like, Tati, you also have points? So I said, yeah, it's just a little bit different. Anyway, so I'm taking her out, and he says, his name is Shmuel Yitzchak, he says, Tati, I want to come. And I said, no, this is her special one. And I said, and he's getting like all flustered and upset, and like pouty. And I said, Shmuel Yitzchak, you're also going to get your own private trip, right? You only have, he's up to 95 and a half. No, sorry, 94 and a half. I said, you only have a few more points, then you're going to get your own special trip, and like, it's going to be bigger, right? You have 100 points. And yet he still had a problem with it. In other words, I was trying to calm him down, like a father to a child, saying, like, you know, don't worry that she's getting this. You're going to get something even bigger. So Rashi says, Aaron was kosher daita, that he wasn't part of the Chanukah. He and his sheva were not part of the Chanukah's Hamizbeach. So Hashem says, don't worry, you're going to get something bigger. Like, what is this? Like, he's trying to, like, calm down a child? Like, what's going on over here? So I'd like to suggest that maybe the pshat by Aaron is like this. We found earlier that when he was doing the miluim, when they first started using the Mishkan, so it said that the Shekhinah didn't come down right away. So Rashi brings that Aaron said to Moshe, why'd you do this to me? I knew that Hashem was not going to be happy with my avodah because I was involved in the Egel Hazav, and I know that it must be that Hashem is not happy with my avodah. Why'd you do this to me? Right? I mean, you could ask, like, what in the world is that kasha? Why'd you do this to me? Like Moshe Rabbeinu was telling him, God told me to tell you, you're the one, you're the man. The pshat is that he could have davened. Maybe Moshe Rabbeinu could have davened for someone else to be it, or maybe Moshe Rabbeinu could have chosen himself, right? Because it says all the way back by the sneh. So it says that something Halevi. Rashi brings a Chazal over there that said that really Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to be the kahuna, just that because he refused, right, and he thought that Aaron was going to be upset at him because he overly refused, he overdid it, so therefore it was taken away from him and it was given to Aaron. So maybe the pshat is that Aaron, you know, said, you know, Moshe, why did you do this to me? Because maybe you could have davened to get it back or something like that. Whatever the case, maybe we see that Aaron had, you know, if we could talk this way about Aaron HaKohen, you know, but on our level of understanding, he had a certain chip on his shoulder that he was like worried about his history with the Egel Azov being like a psul in him, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu not being happy with him. So I would like to suggest that maybe that's what's going on over here also. It wasn't some the pshat that Aaron was worried, you know, that why didn't we get a part in that mitzvah? Maybe he was worried that the fact that he wasn't part of this Chanukah Samizbeach was an expression of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being unhappy with him to a certain extent because of the whole thing with the Egel, because of the old history from the Egel. So the Rebbe was saying, no, it's not that. Chayecha she'elcha gadol mishalohem. So from these two things together, what I wanted to point out is that Aaron was in a matziv where he felt left out. But not only did he felt left out, according to this pshat that I'm trying to suggest, he felt rejected. He felt like the matziv right now is one that I am being pushed away, right? I am being denied access, denied entry, rejected. You're not wanted, right? And the Rebbe Shlomo says to him, no, it's not like that. It's not that you're not rejected. It's not that you're rejected. It's not that you're not wanted. It's just that this is what I had as being what they need to do, and you have something else that you need to do. A lot of times, you know, things happen where we feel like we're being feathered, or defeathered, if you will, right? We feel like, you know, just You know, kind of like that old joke that the emperor is, you know, the emperor has no clothes, like that type of feeling. You know, we feel like we're being just humiliated, right? Whether internally or externally, right? We might sometimes feel like we're being squashed, like our life situation, our life circumstances is just squishing us, right? Sometimes there are things going on in life, whether it's within ourselves, whether it's with other people, whether, you know, it's with whatever situations we're dealing with, right? That we feel just like we're getting crushed by the burden of what it is that we have to deal with. And sometimes we feel like just we're being tossed around. Just like, you know, we're being thrown around. You know, just like, you know, sometimes, you know, like with Dugma, sometimes it can happen that a guy is not working out in one yeshiva, so he goes and tries in another yeshiva. He starts it with good chavrusas, and then the chavrusas don't pan out. They dump him, right? So he feels dumped. He feels rejected. He feels like he's being tossed around. He doesn't feel any sense of equilibrium or any sense of being anchored anywhere. And sometimes, like, the world feels shaky. Like, the you know, like, we like feeling like we're on solid terra firma ground. We like feeling mechobedik, and we should feel mechobedik, right? And sometimes just the circumstances of life don't, you know, don't help us to feel like that. We feel like we're being humiliated, rejected, right, tossed around, etc. So I think one thing that, at least one thing that you can take out from here is that what we need to realize is that we don't understand what's behind the curtain, so to speak. We don't understand what the grand master conductor has in store for us, and why it is that I have to have all, you know, figuratively speaking, why it is that all of my hair has to be shaven off, right, figuratively speaking. I don't necessarily understand why it is that I have to be squished or squashed or, like, crushed under a heavy burden. And I don't understand why it is that I have to be tossed around. But what we do need to realize and remember is that a lot of times what seems to us to just be like this haphazard being squashed and tossed around is actually the key to eventual godless that we'll be able to achieve. Now, godless is a funny thing, because especially, you know, in the generation that we live in, godless... I heard that... I think my Rebbe told me this, Avraham Lapiansky, that... who's that famous... Rav Yaakov... Rav Yaakov Hillel? Is there someone named Rav Yaakov Hillel? Something like that. Kitzur, he's like a Sfarad Hashem Kubel. Big Talmud Chacham. I think his name is Rav Yaakov Hillel. Yeah? You've heard of him? He used to learn the Chavrusa with the Shem Shem Pinkus. Because, so I'm pretty sure that my Rebbe told me that one time he was at an event, and Rav Yaakov Hillel was there, and there were like journalists, photographers there. And he turned to them and he said, "Listen, you journalists, you, how do you say that in Hebrew? Itonaim. He said, you guys have to be very careful. You guys are choosing the future Gedolei Yisrael. Choose well." In other words, we live in a time where, like, godless is defined by who's the one who's, like, in most of the news articles, newspapers, magazines, whatever, like, that's the definition of godless. Like, who do people notice most, right? But that's actually not the real definition of godless. The real definition of godless is if a person is achieving and accomplishing what he himself was put in this world to achieve and is able to achieve. An official Shefter said over a mashal, I don't remember who he quoted this from, maybe some Hasidic Rebbe, that a mashal for a lot of the things that happen in life is like, imagine if you have a king with his servants, he has his avadim, and he tells all of them, I want you to wash out these, I want you to take these buckets and empty all the water out of the lake over there. Take the buckets into a... So they take all the buckets, and they start drawing the water with the buckets, but they realize that the buckets are bottomless. There's no bottom in the buckets. So, most of the avodim say, Mali b'batzara hazais, avodas parech, I'm not interested, I'm out of here. Right? Either the king has something else in mind, or he's just absolutely crazy, I'm leaving. But there were a few avodim ne'amonim, they decided, listen, I don't understand why, but you know what, the king told me to do it, I'm going to do it. So, they keep doing it and keep doing it, and the king comes by after a while and he sees that most everybody just, you know, went kaput, they left. But there's a few of these guys that, and he asked him, he said, why are you guys doing this? And did you somehow figure out what it is that I wanted? And he said, no. Well, we have no idea what you want, right? None of the water's coming out of the lake, but we're trying. And he said, well, why is it that you're doing it then? Because you said so. We, you know, we're faithful to you, we want to listen. And he said, okay, so now I'll tell you what it is that I wanted. I wanted the buckets to be washed out. What's the idea? The idea is that a lot of times things happen in life where we feel like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just like, You know, it's like you ever have a hamster as a pet? Any of you have a hamster as a pet? You know what a hamster is like? Kind of looks like a mouse. So there's a toy. I had a hamster. I was like into like creatures when I was a kid. I still am a little bit. So like there's a toy that you can buy from the pet store. It's this like wheel. Okay. Oh, you know what I'm talking about? So the hamsters run on it and they have fun. They're not getting anywhere, right? But they feel like they're getting everywhere. I actually also had a toy. Probably turn this off. I also had a toy that I bought where it's a ball, this plastic ball with air holes that you put them in it, and then they actually, you can put them on the floor and they run around all over the floor. That was fun. Sometimes I would open up the ball, let them stop running around. Anyway, whatever. Kids, that's really getting off track. But they're getting nowhere. So sometimes we feel like life is just like this hamster wheel, right? You know, we're made to run, but we're not getting anywhere. We're just going in circles, or we're like a tape that just keeps going back in the blip and then keeps going back. And that's because we have a very limited vision of what's going on behind the scenes, but the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't. And the Ribbono Shel Olam knows every single thing. Like sometimes it could be that, yeah, what you need to do right now is that you need to deal with the sense of rejection, the sense of dejection, the sense of being, you know, defeathered, squashed, right, and slugged around like, you know, slugging kapars. And somehow that is going to bring you to your godless if you'll just recognize that Hakol B'Dei Shamayim, right, and you just have to, you know, hold on and go weiter, right? And that will bring you to your godliness. Now, about what we see later in the parasha by the people that were tamei when they wanted to do the Karban Pesach, and they said, Lama Nigara, why should we lose out just because we're tamei the nefesh? It's not fair. And they said, it's not fair. We don't want to lose out. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, okay, I'll ask the Ribbono Shel Olam. And it was al yideim shenis galgal the parasha of Pesach Sheni. So Rashi said that really bad to him, it would have been given anyway, but his galgal is chutz al yidei zakai, right? So you see from there that Amanda, if things seem to not be going your way, so to speak, so Amanda, try to your best ability to, you know, to make things better, but to realize that the same thing, like the Gemara tells us, kol adoichik es hashoah, anybody who tries to push the moment, the moment is going to push him. And anybody who allows himself to be pushed by the moment, to be pushed down by the moment, then the moment is eventually going to stand for him. In other words, it has to be with a balance. If things seem to not be going well, or things seem to be going, you know, in what looks like not good, so try to make it better. Try to make it better. But if you try, and you see that it's not going, don't try to force the issue, so to speak. Don't try to force the moment. Because realize that even if you were not, let's say, you know, given the, if I was talking to girls, I would say this, given the part in the play that you wanted, right? Or, you know, you weren't given Lamazagin the aliyah, you know, in yeshiva that you wanted, or whatever else is. Well, what are the kibbutzim that people get in yeshivas? I've been out of yeshivas for so long now. What are the kibbutzim that get in yeshivas? Atahar Reisa, I don't know, what do they get? Anyway, whatever, the one to say this, Dvar Torah by the meal, I don't know what it is that the, right? You weren't given that, you know, that part, right? Or you feel like you're being tossed around, you feel like you're in the middle of a tempest, you feel like, what's going on over here with this, the humiliation that I'm dealing with, right? And all the heavy things that I'm dealing with. Like, why? What is this all about? To realize that there's someone behind it all, right? Who is apportioning every single person exactly what it is that's their role and they need to achieve their godliness. Chayecha shalcha gedoyt mishalahem. I don't think this is pashut pshat in the words, but I think you could say b'derech melitza shelcha gedoyt mishalahem. I one time said a zog to someone: if you always are trying to be someone else, you'll be nobody. But when you accept yourself, then you become yourself. And shelcha gedoyt mishalahem. If I'm looking at the other guy and thinking, oh, I like what he's got, I want to be like that, I want to have that, I want to be able to do that, v'chulei. So that's not for you the nekuda of godless. The nekuda of godless for you is shalcha. What's yours, gedoyl mishalahem. Because what's meant to be yours, the chelak ha'avayda, whatever that chelak is, whether the chelak is being mavik the neiros, or whether the chelak is being the shomer mishmeres hakodesh, and the only way for whatever reason to get there is to be feathered, you know, squashed and swung around like a chicken, right? So that is gedoyl mishalahem. Because that is your godless. That's your nekuda of godless. I'll send off with one verse on the end of the parasha. Do we have time? What time? Oh, you have the time? Anybody on their phones? No? 55. All right, let's see if I can get it in real quick. A couple minutes. So it says at the end of the parasha, so we have the parasha with Miriam and Aaron speaking Lashon Hara about Moshe, that he was purged from his wife. Tzipoiro. So, and they got punished. She got saras. So, it's interesting. The pasuk says, "Vayemer Hashem Moshe Vayavia Yarak Bepanel Halaisi Kalim Shivas Yom." If her father would have spat in her face, then she would be ashamed and embarrassed for 7 days. Meaning she would be naig nizifa for 7 days. Tisagir Shivas Yom Yichus Lamachna Ve'achat Yalsev. So let her be closed off as a mitzayra for 7 days, and then afterwards she'll come back in. Meaning let her be a mitzayra. She has to be a mitzayra for 7 days because Moshe Rabbeinu Daven that she should be healed right away. So Rashi brings down the Gemara that says that this is a kal v'chomer, right? The Baruch Hashem was making a kal v'chomer, right? If her father would have given her a nizifa, then she would have been a nizufa for at least 7 days. So kal v'chomer by me, right? And the kal v'chomer be'etim would have said to wait 14 days, right? Because Harei Hashem is more than a father. Elamai dayoy labo min adin liyos kenidon. You guys are familiar with that concept, dayoy labo min adin liyos kenidon? Meaning when you're donning a kal v'chomer, so you can't don the nidon any more than that from which you're donning it. So it's like this is one of the midos shatara nidresh is pointing. You know, like it's like one of the more like technical points in the Torah. It seems a little bit odd, no, that this comes like pumped over here in this ma'aseh with Miriam speaking lashon hara, right? And pumped over here, this is where we learn dayoy labam and adin liyos kenidon. It's like it's odd, you know. It's like almost Imer Darshani, you know. Like what do you want? So what's the side of Dayoy? What is Dayoy telling us? So I think the side of Dayoy is telling you, you can't learn out anything more than that which is absolutely mukhrach. You're right. Kafi hasharas hadas. It really should come out that if this one is 7 days and this one is 14 days. But that requires a certain amount of extrapolating. It's not mukhruch mamish absolutely. What is mukhruch absolutely is 7 days. Because if the father is 7 days, then it must be at least 7 days. So Dayoy is telling you that you can't run out more than what's absolutely mukhruch. Right? And what is mamish for sure. I'm listening to a CD now from Rabbi Yechiel Yaakovson about chinuch, and he said that there was a father who was heavily punishing his child a lot, and he was trying to convince him to stop, and the father kept telling him, no, it's for chinuch, it's not aser, and he was trying to tell him that it's aser, it's mamish aser, and the kids are back and forth, and he couldn't get the father to meet him. So he said, you know what, who's your rav? Who do you go by? So he said, Rav Chaim Kanievsky. He said, Beseder, let's go to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, we'll ask him. So they went to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and they presented the question. Rav Chaim said to him, "Ata metzayer al toharbe? You're inflicting a lot of pain on him." And he said, "Yeah." And he said, "Ata batuach sheze yoyil? 100% sure it's going to work? No, no batuach. Az mi yitenecha?" So the father said back to him. He said, "But it's for chinuch and this and that." And Chaim said, "You yourself just said you're not 100% sure that it's going to help. So who gave you a heter to inflict pain on a Jew? But because you think he's your property?" So I wanted to tell you that what you see from Rav Chaim, from this Vart, is that if let's say you have a ruler, a Moishel or something like that, when he gives a punishment, could be that he'll give a punishment which is more than necessary. Not that which is absolutely mukhruch and for sure is necessary and will help. He might give more. But a father, a tate, only gives exactly what's necessary and only because it for sure is going to help. So the Ribbono Shel Olam said, I mean, you could imagine, for Miriam Hanavia, she was such a chosh of a person, and then she had to suffer this embarrassment of being, you know, sent out of the camp. She must have felt an incredible feeling of rejection. But at the same time, the Ribbono Shel Olam uses this lashon of Avia Yerek Yerek Lefana. I mean, Hashem could have just said to Moshe, you know, just get to the point. 7 days, finished. What, Hashem has to make a kal v'chomer? No, when we're learning up the Torah, so we need to make kal v'chomer to try to learn out dinim that the Ribbono Shel Olam didn't explicitly talk about it. But over here, Moshe Rabbeinu is asking the Ribbono Shel Olam for a reprieve. And so Hashem could have just said, 7 days, that's her judgment, finished, vital. Why was this whole thing necessary? So I want to tie it up with Derech Efshir. That maybe the Pshat is that even though Miriam had to suffer this punishment, she did have to suffer this punishment. Because Lomai Sinkaret, she did do an Aver, she did have to suffer the punishment. But at the same time, the Ribbono Shel Olam was bringing Meramis to her, but I'm giving you the punishment for Teres and Abba. I'm giving you the punishment as a father. right? It's out of love. It's because I care about you. I want the best thing for you, right? And that's also the concept of daya. And therefore, I'm only giving you exactly what's necessary, not what really be'etzem kifi proper svara should have been 14 days. No, I'm only giving you precisely what's absolutely necessary. No more, not more than that. Okay, Sidney, we'll stop here. There's another little shtickle about the no time. All right.